Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hello, I'm Blair Bathory, and this is the Something Scary podcast. Thank you so much for being here. Whether this is your first time or you're one of the brave souls who join us every week. Thanksgiving is supposed to bring good food and family joy. Yet the reunion of so many can unearth hidden turmoil. From ancient family quarrels to long-buried secrets and the ghost of the past, the holiday, meant to be giving gratitude, can ultimately bring out the worst side of humanity. And you better hope you can survive it. That is, until you go through it all again next year. First, a very bloody dinner. Then, murder at the Coronado. Finally, in our final story, a deadly fear realized. Before we get to our stories, I wanted to say thank you to all of our fans. Without you, there would be no Something Scary. We are so grateful to all of you who listen and watch each week. And if you know someone that also loves scary stories like you do, send them the link so they can listen too. So, wanna hear something scary? Feast of Fear. When the ghosts of the past are unsettled, they'll lash out at whoever they can get their hands on. Inspired by a true story and written by Sarah Luca. Winter of 1891 was quickly approaching. As Thanksgiving neared, the Walsingham family decided to return to their home state of Georgia and take up residence in an old house the family acquired. From the very first day, they sensed a strong aura coming from the house. The best way they could describe it was like claustrophobia, an overpowering dread of being alone within its four walls. Even the family dog knew something was off. He was the first to sense the sinister nature of the place when he refused to enter the house, his instincts rebelling against whatever lurked within. When the Walshinghams finally managed to coax him inside, he started barking incessantly, his fur bristling with rage, his eyes filled with terror. This bizarre behavior repeated several times during the day and the same evening. Eventually, this led to a horrifying scene. The dog began what can only be described as a frantic attack on an invisible person, leaping as if to grasp a man's throat before falling back, lifeless, with a broken neck. Meanwhile, the Walshingham's cat seemed to exhibit an eerie delight in the house's presence. It roamed from room to room, purring loudly, and at times, it appeared to twist its head from side to side, as though it was being stroked by a phantom hand. The Walshinghams were deeply unsettled by these events. Though they couldn't fathom supernatural causes, the house's strong presence was growing undeniable. Still, they went on with their plans to host Thanksgiving dinner. As the family and a few guests gathered that night, their conversation was shattered by a horrific, inhumane groan coming from the room above. Little attention was paid to it initially, until one of the guests pointed out a dark stain on the tablecloth. As they gazed up, a thick blood-like liquid was slowly dripping from the ceiling overhead, staining the tablecloth. It's blood, Mrs. Walshingham shouted. A chill of dread went through the room. For a few paralyzing seconds, they all sat in silence, their faces drained of color, their gazes darting to each other in terror. Then, Mr. Walshingham shook off the paralysis and bolted out the room, his son following closely behind. They raced upstairs to the room above the dining area, their minds consumed by the dread of the nightmarish sight they were about to encounter. But when they flung open the door, they found the room to be completely empty. Now surrounded by the rest of shocked family and guests, they ripped up the carpet and discovered that the boards beneath were saturated with the same red, gruesome liquid that had been dripping onto the dining table. They searched for answers, but it was inexplicable. Medical examination later confirmed that the substance was indeed human blood. The Walshinghams made the decision to abandon the house, and its sinister story spread like wildfire, causing it to become shunned by the locals. This, of course, piqued the interest of those obsessed with the paranormal. Several years passed without any soul venturing into the house, until a young man named Horace Gunn, driven by a sick curiosity, bet a significant sum of money with friends that he could spend a night alone in the house without calling for help. Horace arrived at the house on a gloomy evening just before nightfall. Following is the harrowing account he shared with his friends. I had been inside the house for about an hour, and nothing out of the ordinary had happened. It was just beginning to get dark, and I decided to set about lighting a fire. To my surprise, I found myself utterly incapable of doing so. The matches kept going out, one after the other, as if extinguished by the unseen force. Even when I managed to light a piece of paper, it merely smoldered for a few seconds before dying out. This was bad enough, as it dashed my hopes of a comforting fire to keep me company. To make matters worse, my lamp refused to light, as if it was filled with water instead of oil. Then, in the deepening darkness, a horrific yell of pain echoed from beneath the house. It was the signal of an outbreak of the most hideous and demonic noises. Shouts, screams, groans, maniacal laughter, thumping sounds, and the continuous running up and down the stairs. My hair stood on end, and I found myself standing by the window, virtually paralyzed by the fear. If I could have controlled my limbs, I would have fled from the house. Suddenly, the noises ceased, and an eerie silence settled in the room. Paradoxically, the silence was even more dreadful than the cacophony of terror that preceded it. All the while, I strained my ears, listening for something, anything. From time to time, I thought I heard soft footsteps drawing near, but they proved to be mere figments of my imagination. Waiting in that silence, dreading what might come next, was even more terrifying than the pandemonium that had engulfed the house. I didn't have to wait long for the next horrific event. In the darkness, a small grayish light suddenly appeared on the wall opposite me. It grew larger and larger, changing in shape until it assumed the form of a human head, while losing its flatness. It was an actual head floating in the air with long, matted gray hair and a deep, jagged cut on one temple. The face bore the unmistakable marks of suffering and misery, with eyes wide open, gleaming with an otherworldly fire, all the while fixated on me. The head moved around the room, but the eyes remained locked on my terrified form. And then it vanished. In its place, a deafening and awe-inspiring wail erupted in the room, sounding as if several souls were caught in unending torment. Indistinct shapes seemed to flit about, and, gathering every ounce of courage, I attempted to pass through them to reach the door. But just as I reached the threshold, I felt a vice-like grip on my ankle, and I was thrown to the ground, fingers tightening around my throat. At this point, Mr. Gunn's narrative ended abruptly. He was found by his friends the following morning, unconscious and sprawled on the floor near the door. his throat bearing the unmistakable marks of long, thin fingers with cruel, curved nails. Following Horace's horrifying ordeal, no one dared to venture near the accursed house. Though a few individuals intrigued by the supernatural attempted to uncover the reasons behind the haunting, their investigations yielded no conclusive results. As time passed, the house was ultimately torn down. During the demolition, many human bones were discovered under the house and in its surrounding grounds. The origins of these bones remained a mystery, although it was speculated that they had been there for many years. It was believed that these were the remains of the people who met gruesome fates when the house had served as a roadside inn of ill repute. One journalist believed they discovered the reason for the house's hauntings. A few days before moving in with his family, Mr. Walshingham had stumbled upon some old dried bones in the grounds. Uncertain whether they were human or not, he ordered them to be thrown into a lime kiln, a final act of disrespect towards these unfortunate souls. The thought is that these restless spirits, enraged by the desecration of their remains, rose up to taunt the new owners. If that's true, not even the demolition of a house could destroy these spirits, who for decades have been dying to rest in peace. Do you believe that animals have a sixth sense with regards to spirits? If your dog was giving you a warning, would you heed it? Has this ever happened to you? If so, tell us your story by sending us an email at somethingscary@snarled.com.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com. Even when you think you know someone, they always seem to have hidden secrets. Secrets that usually reveal themselves in death. This story is inspired by true events. The Hotel Del Coronado, an architectural marvel that graced the sun-soaked San Diego shoreline, had been the sight to behold when it first opened its doors to guests in 1888. As the largest resort hotel in the world at the time, it became a magnet for visitors from all corners of the globe. Its history was punctuated not only by the grandeur of its architecture, but also by the stories of those who entered its halls. Stories that ranged from the heights of celebrity to the depths of death and tragedy. In the early years, the establishment that had already played host to Presidents Harrison, Roosevelt, Eisenhower, Kennedy, and a parade of other influential figures. But it was during the Roaring Twenties when the hotel truly came into its own, casting its allure wide and far. The era of Prohibition brought with it a unique kind of merriment. As Hollywood's brightest stars descended upon the Del Coronado. Legends such as Marilyn Monroe, the brilliant inventor Thomas Edison, and the iconic baseball player Babe Ruth were some of the attendees at the hotel's lavish parties. The front desk clerk, Mr. Evans, had a front row seat to it all. However, amidst the opulence and the bright lights of fame, one guest stood out to him from the rest. A young woman named Lottie A. Bernard. She arrived at the Hotel Del Coronado on Thanksgiving evening, 1892, a date meant for family and feasting. But her arrival alone seemed to cast a shadow over the holiday festivities. Ironic,
since he himself was working on the holiday away from his own family, but he couldn't help but be struck by Lottie's ethereal beauty and the profound sadness that seemed to envelop her. Her frequent visits to the front desk were unusual, as she was constantly inquiring about her brother's impending arrival. He was a doctor, she claimed. With each passing day, her appearance grew more detached and sickly. It was as though she was reaching out for something, though the staff remained oblivious to the depths of her distress. Each interaction with Lottie followed the same pattern. She was waiting for her brother, who, it seemed, would never arrive. By the fifth day of her stay, Mr. Evans had grown accustomed to her visits, even looking forward to them. However, on that morning, Lottie failed to appear. It was that morning that forever altered the course of the hotel's history. Later that day, a chilling discovery was made on an exterior staircase leading to the beach. A lifeless Lottie with a gunshot wound to her head lay sprawled across the stairs. Whispers and speculation ran like wildfire among the hotel's staff. Was it foul play, or had a desperate soul found herself abandoned, unable to find help? When the police conducted a thorough search of her room, they found nothing. No personal belongings, no suitcase. There was no sign of a murder weapon, and there was nearly nothing to identify her except the name she had used for her registration, Lottie A. Bernard from Detroit. The San Diego County coroner eventually concluded that her wounds were self-inflicted, but the mystery surrounding her death remained. All the employees were questioned. Everyone seemed to have taken a liking to her. No one touched her belongings. Mr. Evan couldn't even recall if she checked in with luggage. He was just so taken by her presence. No matter how hard he tried, he couldn't remember. Determined to find the truth, the police distributed a sketch of Lottie's face and the details of her tragic end to newspapers and the police stations across the country, in the hopes that someone might shed light on the dark mystery surrounding the death of Jane Doe at the Coronado Hotel. In time, Lottie Bernard was identified as Mrs. Kate Morgan, originally hailing from Iowa. She was the wife of Tom Morgan, a man known for making his living through gambling on the railroad. Kate and Tom had journeyed to the hotel with the intention of him exploiting wealthy and unsuspecting celebrities in a gambling scheme. That may have been where their morals diverged from one another. During the investigation into Kate's tragic death, a gentleman came forward with an eyewitness statement. He had heard Kate engaged in a heated argument with a man, believed to be Tom, on a train bound for San Diego. The witness claimed that Tom had disembarked before reaching San Diego, leaving Kate to continue her journey to Hotel Del Coronado alone. It is assumed that she waited for Tom to rejoin her, and when he never arrived, Kate's despair led her to her own demise. As time passed, the hotel became a hotbed of paranormal activity, with room 3327, the very room Kate had occupied in 1892, serving as the epicenter of eerie occurrences. Mr. Evans, now accustomed to hearing these unsettling stories from guests and fellow staff members, couldn't help but wonder if Kate's restless spirit was responsible for their inexplicable events. Guests and employees have reported flickering lights, televisions turning on and off of their own accord, abrupt changes in room temperatures, unexplained voices, and the unsettling sensation of an unseen presence. Some even claim to have glimpsed the ghostly apparition of Kate Morgan herself, perpetually wandering the hotel's halls. As the years passed, Kate's presence persisted, ensuring that she would never spend another Thanksgiving alone. The Hotel Del Coronado, once a symbol of luxury and opulence, now bore the enduring mark of a tragedy that continued to captivate and haunt, with Kate Morgan's spirit forever in its walls. Would you be able to stay in a location where you know people have died? Would you be terrified of the ghosts or welcome them? So Sometimes, when left to our own devices, we can let fear grow in our head like a cancer taking over our own body. But sometimes, it's not just all in our heads. Like in this story, inspired by Jeffrey. Greg Everglade looked out the car window, watching the seemingly endless fields whiz by. He was leaving the noisy city and headed to his grandparents' farmhouse in Kansas for Thanksgiving. This year was different, however. His parents were dropping him off for a few weeks and leaving for their own vacation to Europe. That was fine by him. He loved his grandparents. His grandma makes the best Thanksgiving dinners, and his grandpa would always sneak him candies. Greg spotted their house in the distance. It was the only one in the area for miles, and the flatland made it easy to see. As they approached, he saw his grandma in the rocking chair, who smiled when she saw Dad's car pull up in the driveway. Once the car stopped, Greg got out and gave his grandma a bear hug, then waved his parents off to go catch their flight. Greg turned back to Grandma, asking where Grandpa was. He was out back putting up new scarecrows out in the field. Grandpa had found them in the market for free. With excitement, Greg ran to go find him. The cornfield was about the size of a football field. They mainly used it to feed themselves, and it was the sweetest corn Greg had ever tasted. He didn't know what they had in their crops, but the corn was amazing. Greg made his way into the cornfield. The crops made it hard to see, but Greg thought he spotted his grandpa. He ran over to the figure, quickly realizing it was a scarecrow on its post. But to Greg, the scarecrow looked menacing. It was about 6 feet tall, but its post dangled at a foot off the ground. The scarecrow had a pointed gray straw hat. The scarecrow's arms were long, spindly sticks, with the ends curled up like fingers. The scarecrow's head was a pumpkin, with triangle eyes and a mouth full of sharp teeth carved into it. The scarecrow was looking down, almost directly at Greg. It looked like it wanted to chew on his flesh right then and there. Greg shrieked and stumbled to the ground, hitting it with a hard thud. He wanted to look away from the scarecrow, but its gaze seemed to put Greg in some sort of trance. With a loud wail, he cried for his grandpa. When he looked up, Grandpa stood next to him with a worried expression on his face. Greg pointed to the scarecrow. It scared him. With a chuckle, his grandpa said, "I guess this isn't a good time to tell you that I put up two similar ones over there." He pointed to the right, and Greg could already see one of them a few feet away. Greg, finally standing up, put on a brave face. Grandpa told him they're supposed to be terrifying. That's how they prevent the birds from destroying the crops. Later that afternoon, Greg was up in the guest room. There was a window that looked right over the cornfield. Greg could see all three of the scarecrows from this angle. He knew he was silly, being scared of the scarecrows, but something about them made Greg shiver. When Greg got to the kitchen downstairs, he immediately caught a whiff of meat and potatoes. He grabbed three forks to set the table, then noticed something strange out the window. Greg's heart started to pound when he saw something flickering in the field. It was barely visible because of the afternoon sunlight, but he could see an orange-yellowish light coming from the cornfield. The way the light was moving, though, it looked like it was coming from some sort of flame, like the crops had been lit on fire. He called for his grandpa. By the time they both looked out the window again, everything looked normal. Greg lay in bed, tormented by the unsettling presence of scarecrows outside, feeling thoughts of them finding him in his bed and threatening his sleep. Attempting to reassure himself, he dismissed the scarecrows as mere hay-filled figures, but the restless wind outside made their robes dance, giving them an unsettling appearance of life. The scarecrow's movements became vivid, with small lights flickering within their pumpkin heads. Screaming for his grandparents, they dismissed his claims as imagination, attributing the dark green scarecrow's fall of his post to the wind. Despite Greg's insistence, his grandparents assured him that it was not at all supernatural. Annoyed and scared, Greg reluctantly accepted their reassurance, Grandpa vowing to restore the scarecrow at dawn. The next morning, Greg felt a sense of relief seeing the scarecrow back up on its post. Grandpa went out to put it back, and Greg felt better. He even played catch with his grandpa, though the ball ended up in the cornfield. Bravely entering the maze to retrieve it, Greg discovered it near a maroon scarecrow, its gaze seemingly fixed on him. Terrified, he fled, convinced the scarecrows were alive. Grandpa, skeptical of Greg's claims, guided him back into the cornfield to prove otherwise. They encountered the maroon scarecrow, and Grandpa noticed its altered position. Understanding dawned on him. He attempted to rectify the scarecrow's tilted head, dismissing Greg's supernatural claims. At dinner, Greg felt uneasy. His grandparents expressed concern about his scarecrow fixation. "I'll take the scarecrows down," his grandfather offered. Greg was overjoyed. Grandpa assured Greg that the scarecrows would be gone by the morning. With the plan set, Greg promised not to mention the scarecrows once they were gone. Grandpa reassured him that he wouldn't see them again. Greg found solace in not seeing the scarecrows outside his window, anticipating a peaceful night's sleep. After dinner, Greg eagerly joined Grandpa in dismantling the scarecrows, reveling in a sense of victory over the eerie figures. With each scarecrow taken down, Greg felt like a conqueror, successfully ordering their execution. The removal of the scarecrows lifted Greg's spirits. He enjoyed caramels from Grandma, continued reading, and peacefully drifted off to sleep until a late-night knock disrupted his rest. Greg, groggy and disoriented, encountered a mysterious light under his door. No response came from the mysterious visitor, and the creaking door revealed the gray scarecrow, its flame flickering ominously. Frozen with fear, Greg watched as the maroon and dark green scarecrows joined the grisly spectacle, their teeth stained with what appeared to be blood. Panic set in as the scarecrows advanced towards him. Desperation drove Greg to contemplate calling for his grandparents, but the imminent danger dissuaded him. Spotting the window as a potential escape route, Greg quickly opened it and carefully descended to the porch below. The gray scarecrow, undeterred, began entering through the window. Greg, thinking on his feet, let go, landing without injury. Aware of the pursuing scarecrows, he sprinted to the front of the house, calling for his grandparents. His frantic run came to a horrifying halt when he discovered the lifeless bodies of his grandparents in the front of Grandpa's Jeep, their flesh torn and bloodied. Shocked and devastated, Greg realized the source of the red stains on the scarecrows. It was his grandparents' blood. The grim reality sank in as Greg grappled with the loss and the chilling fact that he was alone. Panic surged when he saw the approaching scarecrows. In a futile attempt to escape, he sprinted towards the dirt road, only to be seized by the relentless scarecrows. As Greg screamed for help, he was dragged back into the farmhouse, realizing the harsh truth. He hadn't won the war against the scarecrows. Now faced with his impending demise, Greg understood that he had been the fool all along. The scarecrows, once his enemies, had emerged victorious, and he was now the one sentenced to death. Have you ever been afraid of inanimate objects? Does it still haunt you in your dreams? Or were you able to somehow get over it? This week's podcast stories were edited by Sarah Lukasiewicz, narration by Blair Bathory, audio edited and mixed by Fitz Harris, produced by Anna Villalobos, executive produced by Gail Gilman, music by Sapphire Sandalo and Calvin Linderman. If you have a story you'd like to submit, send me an email at somethingscary@snarl.com. Don't forget to watch the video version of Something Scary over at youtube.com/snarled. And if you'd like to support the show and everything we do at Snarled, join our Patreon at patreon.com/snarled. Until next time, my spooky friends, sweet screams.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.